the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show. I'm Jen, and today on Signal Boost we have George Sandison, the managing editor of Unsung Stories, who is kickstarting a new collection of dystopian short stories called 2084. Welcome, George.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. This, as I said before, is basically our inaugural episode of Signal Boost, and I'm really glad that we can have you on. So tell us a little bit about 2084 and the Kickstarter, why you decided to start it, and why you think it's important, things like that.
Okay, so first of all, I mean, the anthology, if we've got it right, then people should have a pretty good idea of what it's about already. But the theme basically is 2084. It's doing what Orwell did, and looking to our future, to the year 2084. We're quite specific about this one as well, in that it's not doing 1984 fanfics. So we're not looking for kind of the future of the party or what happened to Oceania and all the rest of it. We're looking for people to do what Orwell did. And basically we had the idea quite a while ago. Actually, it was one of those ones that felt like a good idea when we came up with it, partly because, like I say, it's kind of pithy and it grabs you and people know it immediately. And it got proven to be perhaps a touch more relevant than we originally planned in the last 6 to 8 months. I mean, especially in America with the Kellyanne Conway thing of the alternative facts. And I mean, it was somewhat despair-inducing, absolutely, but also it made me think, when I'm sitting there on a, you know, a collection of stories that I've got written, and I'm like thinking, well, I'm going to be announcing this in a couple of months. I'm going to be telling the world about it. And I'm thinking, you know, it's bad for reality, but my God, we probably picked quite a good time to do this thing, didn't we?
Absolutely. It does seem that last 6 months have inspired writers to use their voices as a rebellion of sorts, which I think dovetails nicely with what Orwell was doing, and clearly what you guys are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was writing some of the introduction before you called, actually, so I'm kind of thinking about this point as well, and I think it'll be interesting seeing some of the stories that have been written before all of this stuff landed, and some of them will be coming after, because we'll get onto funding in a minute, but we've already hit stretch goals, so we're adding authors to it at the moment. So I think we're going to find there might be some noticeable differences in when people wrote their stories and what they wanted to get from it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. You'll have to mark, though, when you publish it. This one was written pre-election. This one is post-election.
That's an idea, actually. I haven't decided the running order. It could be that we could do it the order that they are written in.
Chronologically, that might be interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But, I mean, it's a curious thing, because one of the other things I've also reread 1984 recently, and it's curious to see how all of the stuff that's really prescient about it and really sticks with you isn't actually to do with how he's predicted the world. You know, because, I mean, Orwell predicted this kind of totalitarian states for the United Kingdom. And he's talking about three super states and the world being, you know, in this state of constant war. And in terms of the details of how it's come together, this isn't right. You know, we don't have bombs dropping on London intermittently. You know, people aren't completely suppressed and identities haven't been obliterated in the way that he predicted. But aspects of it are true, and all of those aspects are very much in the kind of the humanity and the psychology of the book. So, you know, how we communicate to each other. And one of the things that I'm finding very relevant is this kind of this use of propaganda and the malleability of truth. That, I think, is one of the things people have really latched onto this time around.
As you said, the alternative facts scenario, which I think, you know, has been something that has been developing over a great deal of time, but they finally put a word to it. They finally admitted that that's what they've been doing this entire time to an extent. And of course, with the election, where we see finally, oh, it's been working this whole time, so how will that develop from this point on? Will there be a backlash against it? So I'm very interested to see what people think of a future in which all of this has happened. So you have quite a few authors already dedicated to writing stories. Presumably you already have some that you've picked out and are going to be in it. Can you tell us a little bit about the contributors?
I certainly can. As of today, and this might go up by the time it goes out because it's been a ridiculous week already, but we have got 13 writers confirmed. In no particular order, these are Jeff Noon, Christopher Priest, James Smythe, Levi Tidhar, Leah Whiteley, who we publish in Unsung Stories. She's actually going to have her book coming out thanks to Titan and Random House. So The Beauty is coming out in November. So if you haven't read that, check it out because it's amazing. Dave Hutchinson, Cassandra Kaur, Desirina Boscovich, Anne Charnock, Ian Hocking, who's also published by Unsung, Olive Langmead, he's the other Unsung writer, Courtia Newland, and Irenison Okoji. Irenison's just been added recently. She's a British writer who did a collection called Speak Gigantula, which is just one of the wildest and most mad bits of writing I've come across in a long time. Just pure energy from start to finish.
Well, that sounds appropriate for a 2084 anthology.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she'll have quite an interesting angle on it, because in her collection, there's a couple of things that struck me as really quite angry about certain things in the UK. There's a particular story where, I think if I've got it right, people are in prison and they've got this, it's sort of more metaphorical, more figurative than we'll probably see from her for the collection. But, we've got people in prison who've got this kind of lump stuck in their throats that comes out one day and starts taking on its own life and kind of having a more successful life than the person who's stuck in prison. But yes, anyway, so those are the contributors. Just been completely blown away by the responses of all of them, to be honest, because what we did was we just emailed and said, hey guys, we've got this idea. I realize, you know, it's a long shot and we're a small indie. You know, we don't have the weight of Tor or something else to fall back on. But, you know, people like Christopher Priest got back to us and said, yes, this is a good idea. I like it. I want to be involved. You know, staggering.
Right. I mean, well, it is definitely a timely thing. And as I said, authors are out there going, how do I use my voice to fight back? Hopefully that's part of why this is as successful as it is. I think people are very curious about that. So what made you pick the particular people and stories that you picked for the anthology? What were you looking for?
Well, in terms of the stories, I've got this policy with everything I do where I don't really like giving people instruction. I like giving people a context and then waiting to see what they come back with. So very much I just kind of described the motif, you know, the core of the idea and then left them to it. So as why I picked those authors, I mean, a lot of them hopefully will be obvious because, you know, like Dave Hutchinson, for instance, and Anne Charnock, they're very, you know, near future and looking at the sort of outcomes of what can happen in a few years. That's very much their kind of their core work, and that's what they do. Levi Tidhar, I mean, obviously things like A Man Lies Dreaming is a bit more surreal, but he's a provocateur, you know. He gets inside things and he pulls them apart and he has a laugh whilst he's doing it. You know, Jeff Noon's just an incredibly talented writer. I remember reading Vert as a teenager and having this kind of brain pulled open moment, and it's just kind of, you go down the line, and that's why we pick them out. I mean, there's a little bit of editorial caprice in there. Desirina Boscovich is one of them, because again, I read it was Deus Ex Arca in Lightspeed, and another one of those moments where I kind of, you know, had to take my brain out and give it a scrub before I could put it back in.
That's the best kind of filling. All right, so tell us about the Kickstarter. It was launched a week ago or so at this point. And how long is it going for? What rewards can people expect? Are there any left, given the success?
Okay, so the Kickstarter launched on the 29th of May, and Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, did us a massive favour by deciding to sign Article 50, bringing, you know, starting the process for the UK to leave the European Union on the 29th of March. So it was one of these kind of, March, not May, but yeah, it was just one of these moments where I spoke to a few people afterwards and they all said that their Twitter stream for that day was basically Brexit, unsung stories, Brexit, unsung stories. So, you know, it was a good idea and it hit a nerve and then the government handed it to us on the plate. But I mean, we decided to do it this way just because we've got the contributor list and because we've got a good community building around us and we wanted to kind of try and do something that involved them. And, you know, gave people a chance to actually kind of share in the project with us. So, I mean, in terms of the reward tiers, to give you an idea, I mean, we've got two versions of the cover. You'll see those if you check out the Kickstarter page. There's a guy called Marcin Wolski from Poland who's done those. And I love the fact that they're paired. So you know, people see if they go to have a look, you've got this drone sort of flying through a city looking into someone's room in one of them. And then the other one, you've got a view over the cityscape. So there's this kind of sense of continuity. So there's two versions of the cover. One will be Kickstarter only. So that, you know, this is your chance to get it. And then that's it. It's gone. We're putting names of supporters in the back. We are doing some artwork prints of the cover stuff. We're also offering people, other unsung titles. There's a couple of, in fact, no one's taken those yet. There's still two chances for us to edit your manuscript.
Ooh.
By the time this is going out, I'm hoping we will have announced some hardback editions, possibly involving signatures.
Fantastic. So, yeah, you have a few stretch goals that you have going on that I think a couple of them you're pretty close to or have already completed. What else is coming? I guess since this is coming up in about the week of the 13th, 14th, what do you think will be left in terms of your stretch goals? Are you going to have to make some new ones?
Do you know what? The original plan was to raise £2,500. That took 11 hours. And then I thought, okay, come up with some stretch goals. And I went and found more authors. And I thought, brilliant. Well, I'll set the first one at £4,500. By the time I'd managed to finish the conversation and agree the authors and kind of get everything okay to announce, I kind of had to set it at about £6,000. So, you know, I made it nice. I've kind of put it about £500 because I was like, you know what? People have blown me away. I'm going to make the first one nice and easy to hear because you deserve it, frankly. So, by the time this goes out, I suspect we'll probably have raised £25,000 and I'm going to be looking at monogramming limousines or something.
That might be interesting. Maybe monogram some drones. That's very provocative.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you so much. I mean, clearly it's been pretty successful, but hopefully this will give you that, you know, mid Kickstarter boost to get us to that point of monogramming something. Where can people find the Kickstarter and unsung stories in general?
All the information about the Kickstarter is at www.unsungstories.co.uk/2084. And if you take off the 2084, you'll find our website where I recommend, obviously, that you go and buy all of the books immediately.
Of course.
Because I'm contractually obliged to say that to everyone I meet.
You don't get anything extra, though? You know, some bonuses?
But this is indie publishing, isn't it? I mean, I'm...
That's true. Well, thank you so much, George, for coming on the show and telling us all about 2084. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us on Signal Boost.
Welcome to the Skeffy and Fanti Show. I'm Paul, and today on the Single Boost subcast, we have Alexandra Pierce. Say hello, Alex.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
For those listeners who don't listen to you in other media, please introduce yourself and what you do.
In this context, I am one third of Galactic Suburbia, which is a feminist Australian podcast. I write reviews on a blog. I write an Australian and New Zealand wrap-up column for Tor.com. And at the moment, the thing that I'm working on is a book in honour of Octavia Butler, which is due out in June of this year.
And that's why we have you on today. So why don't you tell us about the book and how this project got off the ground and how you got to be involved in it?
So the point of the book is to basically honour Octavia Butler's memory and to acknowledge the contribution that she's made to many of the people who are currently working in speculative fiction, and actually with Butler, even more broadly than that. She herself described herself as having three audiences: the science fiction community, the feminist community, and the black community. So we wanted to acknowledge the importance of her works, which is a relatively small body, but nonetheless incredibly important, as well as the importance of her life more broadly as a Clarion and Clarion West tutor and those sorts of things. The book's come about because it's been about 10 years since she died, and so it seemed like a good time to be thinking about Butler's legacy. And I've got involved because a couple of years ago I was the co-editor of Letters to Tiptree with Elisa Krasnstein, which was published through 12th Planet Press. And part of the whole thing for 12th Planet Press is to be, consciously political and making sure that we're remembering the contribution of women to speculative fiction. And Octavia Butler seemed like an obvious person who had made a contribution that needed to be remembered and honoured. And so I am lucky enough to be in a position where I could be one of the editors on this book.
Okay, so what is the general mission statement of this book, and how, and in the choices of the contributions? You must have received many contributions. What were your aims in your selections in trying to organize them? How are you trying to put this together?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one to think about. So with Letters to Tiptree, we particularly asked for fan letters, basically, because Tiptree / Sheldon was such a prolific writer himself, and received so many in return. Butler was also quite the correspondent, although it's less kind of part of how Butler is remembered. So what we've asked for is both fan letters but also original essays, because there is quite a remarkable amount of academic writing on Butler's work, given that she only had published 12 novels, one of which is basically impossible to find these days, and a handful of short stories. Her bibliography of academic articles on her, it runs to dozens of pages. It's incredible. So what we asked for was people to write us letters or essays that reflected either on particular works of Butler's and how people responded to those, or responding to some aspect of Butler's life that was regarded as inspirational or important in some other way. So when we're choosing pieces to include in the book, we've tried to, I guess, think about that thing that I said before about the three different audiences that Butler saw for herself, to make sure that we're, I guess, honouring that aspect of Butler's life and contribution. And we're also looking to make sure that we're thinking about all of her works. So we wouldn't have wanted an entire book that was just about Kindred, for instance, which I'm pretty sure would be easy to create because it is probably the work that she's most well known for, although Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents has got particularly relevant in the last couple of months.
I've noticed.
So, Yeah, yeah. I think there was even a sign at one of the marches, you know, Octavia warned us. So, yeah, we were trying to make sure that our book reflects as many facets of Butler's life and contribution as possible.
That sounds terrific. So how did you come to first connect with Octavia Butler's work?
I read Lilith's Brood, or the Xenogenesis trilogy, a good few years ago, and I didn't really know who Octavia Butler was at that stage. More recently, I've come to know the name as part of that unfortunate joke about diversity bingo in science fiction, the one that basically goes, if you're asked to name important people in science fiction and you want to show that you're being diverse, you mention Ursula Le Guin. If you want to be really diverse, you mention Le Guin and Samuel Delaney. But if you want to be really, really diverse, you mention those two and Octavia Butler, because you're getting both women and non-white people. So it's a rather unfortunate way to kind of find out just who she was. But as I said before, I think we were, well, I was thinking about what other women in particular in the history of science fiction had both had an enormous impact and I guess hadn't, well, I didn't see them being remembered in a really broad way. And I've since discovered really that actually there's a lot being done last year and this year around Octavia's estate, and all of her correspondence and so on is on at the Huntington Library, and they're doing a huge amount of stuff basically around the 10th anniversary of her dying and so on. But a lot of that is very local rather than being a book that people from around the world can access. So I see this as contributing to that more general acknowledgement of Butler's importance.
So you're looking to help bring an international lens to the importance of her work to those three communities.
Yeah, I think so. And also, I think you could read this, or I hope that you'll be able to read this, with very little knowledge of who Butler was, or without having read much, if any, of her work, and still be able to get a good sense of what Butler's politics were, what her concerns were, and therefore hopefully be inspired to go and read her works. Just getting the basic signal boosting Octavia Butler herself, I guess.
Well, on the Signal Boost subcast here at Skinty Fatty, we can certainly understand signal boosting. So what is your favorite, what piece of Octavia Butler's fiction is the most powerful for you right now?
I think it probably is the two parable books together, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, because they are speaking very much to the world as it is now. There's been a lot of discussion, of course, about the president that Butler imagines in Parable of the Talents and how he does or does not reflect America at the moment and the person of Donald Trump. But I think, I mean, I'm an Australian, you know, we watch what's going on in American politics, but they don't have, doesn't have an enormous impact on our lives. But nonetheless, the kind of the background stuff that Butler's talking about there in terms of climate change and the implications for society and politics and those sorts of things, that could still have an impact in Australia in different ways because our politics work differently. But nonetheless, her concerns about the implications for society are very real. So I think in terms of, I mean, she hated being called a prophet, I believe, but in terms of making you think about the future, which is, I think, what science fiction can do at its best, those are the two books that are most worrying me at the moment.
You're not the only one, I would say. So on a cheerier subject, why don't you tell us a little bit about the wealth of contributors that you have assembled together after all? Who can readers who pick up this volume find pieces from?
It's quite remarkable to see the number of people who've written for us. It's really awesome. There's a bunch of people whose names are going to be well known in different areas. So we Nissi Scholl, Jerry Canavan, Aliyah Dawn Johnson, people like that have written for us. We have people that I would suspect will become more well known in the next few years, if they're not already, because we have a significant number of people who were Octavia Butler scholars to, I think it's both to Clarion and Clarion West. So they're people whose careers maybe haven't got off the ground in a significant way yet, but will in the near future. So that's exciting. And we've got a whole bunch of people for whom, they're not necessarily famous people themselves, but they've had a really important connection to Butler through her works. So I think we've got a really good balance there in terms of how people are reacting and why they're reacting the way they are.
Excellent. So when will the anthology be available to the reading public?
In mid-June this year, we are currently planning on launching at the Melbourne National, well, at the Melbourne Convention for this year, which is also the National Convention Continuum, which I believe that you will be attending, Paul.
I will be attending as the Deaf representative from North America. This is true, listeners. So I will be there at the launch,
which is very exciting.
That is exciting. They want to put me on panel. Hopefully, they will not put me up against that or against Classic Suburbia. I will be cranky if this happens. There's my opportunity to get copies, and I assume this will be available digitally throughout the world for those unfortunate souls who are not going to Australia in June.
Yes, that's right. Yep. So we'll make it very well as widely available as we can so that as many people as possible can access it.
Excellent. And where can listeners find out more information about this and the full list of contributors and more about you?
So the information about the book, which I should say actually has a title relatively recently, is called Luminescent Threads, Connections to Octavia Butler, which is a reference to a phrase from her book, Pattern Master.
Yes.
All of the information is at the 12th Planet Press website and also on their Facebook page.
And we'll link to that in the show notes, listeners. So is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about you or about the book before we thank you for coming on tonight?
I think the last thing that I would like to say is that if you have read Parable of the Sower or Dawn, or you think you might in the near future, I'm running Facebook book clubs on the first Sunday of the month, the first Sunday of May and the first Sunday in June, where we're getting together and talking about different things. So if you're possibly going to read those in the next little while, come along. Or if the timing doesn't work because you're in the wrong part of the world, you can even at least go on to the 12th Planet Press Facebook page and have a look at the conversation and obviously still contribute there. The last couple that we've done have been on Fledgling, which is Octavia Butler's take on a vampire novel, which is just so weird. And the one before that was Wild Seed. So again, all of that's still available on the 12th Planet Facebook page if you wanted to see the conversations we had there.
Okay, so thank you very much, Alex, for coming on the show this evening.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and with that, listeners, and scene.
thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Chronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.